The F in MFA stands for, of course, fine art. So when the MFA opened its new Lindy Family Wing for contemporary art, Boston Globe's arts reporter Jeff Edgers wondered what that meant for the museum that already has a C in its name, Boston's Institute of Contemporary Art. As Edgers put it in this weekend's Boston Globe Sunday magazine, the MFA versus ICA question is about much more than a simple grudge match between art world acronyms.
I remember when the ICA opened its new building on the Fan Pier in 2006, and they decided after all these years they were going to start a collection, and they had a Josiah McElhaney piece. He's sort of a hot artist of the now. And it was a big deal. It was on the wall, and everybody was talking about it, and wow, cool. Well, a couple years later, I was walking through the MFA, the West Wing, and I noticed this piece sort of in the back hallway, tucked under a staircase, kind of where you'd like put the coat rack. And it was a Josiah McElhaney, except much bigger than the ICA's. And I thought, wow, that's what the MFA does. The ICA gets a piece, the MFA gets one, except bigger. And now the McElhaney is moved out of the stairway. It's in the center of this beautiful new gallery. I wondered, what does that mean? Does that mean that every time the ICA does something cool, the MFA is going to do something a little bit bigger and cooler? And how is that going to hurt the ICA?
You describe a really interesting interaction when you put that question to Malcolm Rogers, the director of the MFA. What did he tell you?
Well, you know, I just asked, there's so much contemporary art that hasn't been collected in Boston. Why would you need something that the ICA already has? Why would you need a Mark Bradford when the ICA's done a giant Mark Bradford show? Why do you both need a McElhaney when the ICA already has one? And Malcolm Rogers told me that, you know, in a way, it's a compliment that one of his donors or one of the board members will go to the ICA and see a piece and say, hey, why don't we get one of those? And, you know, it's not a bad point. I will say that in the same conversation, I had the ICA director, Jill Medvedow, there. She said, oh, I'm so glad you have this piece by this particular artist. By the way, we have four of those up right now.
So there's always a little competition regardless of what anyone says.
Sure. I mean, everything in life is competition, right? I mean, these folks might think they're competing against TV and film and Broadway musicals and everything. But the fact is, they're always going to be concerned about their bottom line and how many people are coming in and who's getting the buzz.
And on that point, I mean, isn't buzz a really big and important force and something that they have to think about? I mean, is it going to be of concern to the ICA if the MFA keeps doing things like, you know, bringing in these blockbuster shows like The Clock or the Dale Chihuly exhibit that they had?
Well, you know, the ICA clearly stole the game with exhibitions like The Shepherd Fairey. Having your artist even arrested on the way to his opening party, that was a stroke of genius. But fact is, you know, the MFA, by purchasing The Clock, which is a piece that not only could the ICA not afford that piece, but it wouldn't be proper for it. It would take up too much space. It would demand too much attention in a building that doesn't have all that much space for all these things. You know, it's the right thing for the MFA to buy. But meanwhile, that's the thing people are talking about when they're talking about contemporary art here. And the same goes for the Dale Chihuly, which the Gardner Museum director Ann Holly talks about it being, you know, something that's probably too commercial for the ICA to do. And I agree with that. But it was a hugely popular exhibition. It brought so many folks in there and people were talking about it. This is the MFA's moment right now. And it's natural that they're getting that attention. The question is what happens in 6 or 8 months or a year when, you know, the ICA is looking for that same buzz.
So, Jeff, you ask a really provocative question here. Did you find that the ICA has reason to worry that the MFA might muscle in now?
Well, what I found from visiting the MFA's new wing and also from going back to the ICA is I'm not sure they actually have to worry. I think that there's going to be a difference in the kind of art and the kind of approach those institutions have. So, you know, the MFA is making no bones about the idea that it's more of an entry point for people who aren't, like, knowledgeable about contemporary art. And the ICA is
a gateway
is like,
drug for contemporary art.
Exactly. And the ICA is, you know, it's for the converted. It's you're not going to go there if you only like, you know, Paul Revere's bull or like George Washington on a horse.
Well, that's interesting. But on the other hand, I do wonder because there's maybe, I'm not 100% sure about this, but maybe there's a limited pot of money out there. And if the MFA is going to go after it saying, hey, we're going to feature more big contemporary artists, could that have an effect on the ICA?
Well, it's a really good question. You know, what happens with the donor base in Boston, which is has grown recently, certainly in the cultural world, but is limited to certain people? I mean, there are a few big names you see on everything, or a few big names that contribute and have their anonymous names on everything. And what happens when the ICA launches a campaign and the MFA launches a campaign? The question can't really be answered because there's not a single example of somebody who's jumped from the MFA to the ICA or the ICA to the MFA right now. What you do have are a few people.
In terms of donations.
Right.
Okay.
What you do have is you have a few people who are generous enough that they've been able to give to both.
So, Jeff, we've talked about what the MFA can do by virtue of its reach and its money, but it seems like there's some stuff maybe the ICA can do that the folks on Huntington Ave can't.
Well, the ICA, you know, it's smaller, more flexible. They can make more decisions on the fly. They can do things that are riskier without freaking out their audience. You know, the ICA has also this great curator, Helen Molesworth, you know, giant in the contemporary art field. And her first exhibition, Draw Dance, which is going to be up through January, is, you know, a perfect example of what she does well. It's a thematic exhibition. It's the kind of thing only, you know, an individual could come up with. It's not as if she, you know, decided to buy this big piece of art. It's her vision, and people are very excited to see what she's going to do over at the ICA.
Jeff Edgers is the arts reporter for the Boston Globe. His article, Double Vision, appeared in the Globe magazine this Sunday. There's a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Jeff, thanks so much for coming back in.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. Up next, Our Bodies, Ourselves, How One Book Changed the Way Many Women See Women's Health. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.